Welcome to the Future of Work series presented by Algonquin College's Corporate Learning Center. I'm your host, Doug Weatherspoon, the Chief Learning Officer of an amazing team of creative professionals that are dedicated to helping individuals and organizations thrive. In this series, we're sharing some fantastic insights to help you optimize both yourself and your organization for the future of work. So let me introduce you to Colleen Francis, founder and president of Engage Selling. Driven by a passion for sales that was nurtured at a young age by her father, she is simply put one of the preeminent sales strategists in the world today. A best-selling author on the subject of sales, including Nonstop Sales Boom, a certified sales professional, and in 2020, named the number one sales influencer on LinkedIn. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome Colleen Francis to the podcast. So Colleen, thank you so much for joining us. I've admired your work for quite some time and love the fact that you are here in Ottawa, just down the road. Could I get you to tell folks a little bit about you and specifically what drew you to sales as a career? You know, what were the deciding factors so many moons ago?
Well, I'm not sure I had a choice. So first of all, I grew up in a sales focused household in that my dad was a career salesperson and sales manager. So I think my mindset from an early age was never that selling was a bad thing because it's how we lived, right? And I think also as a result of my dad being in sales, whenever we had anything to sell and I sold wrapping paper, poinsettias, spices, chocolate bars, you know, for band camp or soccer camp or whatever it happened to be, I had to go door to door. I mean, granted, we're talking that this is close to 40 years ago now, right? But still, I had to go door to door. He refused to take that stuff to the office. And so I started selling at an early age. And in fact, when I started to go to university, my summer jobs were all in sales as well. So I seemed to kind of just fall into the profession. I had one summer job where I drove a forklift for a building products company. Other than that, I worked in sales all the way through university. And then it seemed like a natural thing for me to do when I graduated was to take a job with a sales organization.
Very cool. And I love the fact that, you know, you started off with a positive impression of sales, because sales is a positive business, a line of work. And I love that it, you know, we oftentimes we demonize the sales rep. It's certainly the fodder for many a movie and for many a skit. But the reality is that it's a important component of life. Everybody is selling. They're selling themselves. They're selling their cause. Mm-hmm. They're selling their products. So it's
absolutely. It's the only way that businesses make money, right?
Here, here.
Yeah. So it is. It's an important skill. And I think what you said was really critical there. You know, we're selling ourselves. Every job interview is sales, right? It's about influence and rapport, you know, and it's about sharing examples and stories. Storytelling is all about sales. So really, every time you get up to give a presentation, internal, every time you apply for a promotion or go in to ask your boss for a raise, that's all sales.
Here, here. So, you know, we're talking about sales and selling in, you know, a time of great uncertainty and great change, even more so than we might have had, you know, 5 months ago now.
Yeah.
So this, you know, pandemic reality, you talked a little bit today in our Future of Work speaker series, our webinar, about three key components, and I thought we'd break them down a little bit. You talked about the need for flexibility, empathy, and then redundancy from a technology perspective. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about flexibility. What do you mean by flexibility? Why is that so important in today's kind of COVID sales world?
There's a number of components here. One, I think we have to be flexible in terms of our employees' work situation. So for example, if you've got parents at home, single parents or double parents at home with their kids, and it doesn't matter if your employee really works 9 to 5 or maybe works, you know, noon to 8, then we got to be flexible, because maybe giving them that morning to spend time, you know, playing or doing schoolwork is beneficial and makes them just that much more productive and happy. So we have to be flexible in our work style and our work locations, I guess. I think we also have to be flexible in the fact that where people work doesn't matter. So for example, let's say you've got somebody who's single, who lives alone, is all by themselves, you know, in an apartment downtown and feeling lonely, but they could get out to work from the cottage where they have a beautiful view and it's more relaxing and they can go out for a swim once a day. Do we really care? Even if they're out of your time zone. So I think that there's some flexibility that's really important around work style and work location. I think flexibility too in embracing what our customers are looking for. So I have a client who did a really smart thing early on, and they said, well, although GoToMeeting is our platform, we have to be prepared to use whatever platforms our clients want. So we have to learn Teams and Zoom. We have to learn, you know, GoToWebinar, Chime, whatever it happens to be. And as a result, interestingly, their legal teams had to be a bit flexible because they had to realize we have to put the business first. And that might mean figuring out a way to use Zoom without a security risk if our clients need us to do that. So I thought that that kind of flexibility was really interesting to see, because usually legal teams don't crack on any of that stuff, do they?
No, they haven't. Well, I think you have a story about a 62-page come-back-to-work story. That is the flexibility. Well,
yeah. So it's interesting to me because clients are dictating the rules of engagement going back to work. And so, yeah, one of my clients in Louisiana was faced with a 62-page legal document trying to get in the door. And, you know, what was really interesting is we found that not everyone's allowed to travel. So the most common travel ban I'm seeing right now for states and provinces that are open are you can drive out to see people as long as you can return that night. No hotel stays, no flights. So what's happening for a lot of organizations is they're having to create this hybrid approach where a salesperson is on site and maybe their support, their technical salesperson, their manager, whoever else would join that meeting from remote is dialing in. And so two things are happening. One, it's awkward. So having three people in a meeting, one person on screen and the other two not, is actually an awkward situation. We got to socially distance. We can't sit beside each other. We both can't see the screen. I can't, you know, the audio connection isn't very good. So in some cases, people are just choosing not to travel. You know what? We'll have a more equal experience if we're all on screens together. And a couple of my clients are experimenting with some very cool virtual reality technology called HoloLens, which is tied into Microsoft Teams, where I can be on site wandering around and doing a site assessment of my client's facility. And the HoloLens, which is on my eyes, ties directly into Microsoft Teams and allows somebody remotely to have a conversation with me about what they're seeing. So they're being flexible. It's really interesting. I know, it's crazy.
Yeah. So, and you've said something there, and I'm going to come back to it, because you said clients are dictating the rules. And I think that's a fundamental new reality. But let me just keep going through. So let's talk now about empathy. Why is empathy so important, either from a workplace culture perspective or from a client perspective?
So, you know, it's always been important to care about people, especially in sales. If we don't care about our customers, then we can't be successful. But I think that empathy has taken a giant leap forward in its importance in managing people. And I think there's a low tolerance for managers who don't show any empathy. One, early on in the lockdown and the pandemic, I was saying to salespeople and managers, we have to call out the elephant in the room. You have to ask people, how are you doing? And really mean it, not just as a platitude. How are you handling this? What can I help you with? Because people were facing massive amounts of stress. First of all, I think many people early on feared that they would lose their job, right? And so there's always that underlying fear of, well, we're working remotely right now, but I mean, how is the company doing? Are they being transparent with the numbers? Are layoffs coming? So we've got that. Then we've got the stress of working from home in an environment that maybe wasn't set up from working from home, maybe with a spouse or maybe not, also working from home, and maybe with kids piled on being to do school from home. And so all of that is stressful. And then just the underlying stress of not knowing what's going on, right? And not being in, not feeling like you have any control. So I think managers who are really good at finding ways to connect with their people in a caring way, and who were open to having those tough conversations or just listening, were really important.
Yeah. And you know, the reality is that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Safety and security is at the kind of core of that. And so how do you go about creating this safe environment, not just for your employees, but also for your customers?
Yes.
Critical, right? And that whole idea of emotional intelligence, that you need to be kind of plugged in. And oftentimes when we're talking about listening, you know, you can listen with your eyes, you can listen with your ears. People will often, you know, show fear in different ways. The, you know, some will tell you, some will kind of maybe procrastinate, or they'll, you know, slow down. They might be maybe a little angry at you, or they might, you know, a little belligerent. So fear kind of manifests itself in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
Managers really need to hone their skills around empathy and emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence. Yeah. And you know, the easiest way I work with managers, I'm not an emotional intelligence expert, but I do work with managers on improving their emotional intelligence, and that is to be present. And so one of the reasons why I insist with my clients that they use video for their internal company meetings and one-on-ones is it's much easier to be present on video than it is on audio. Because when someone's only on audio, you could be pulling weeds, putting the dishes away, playing with your dog, surfing. No one can see you, right? So it's easy to multitask, and then you miss the cues. And when you're on video, you have to be looking at the person in the face. Otherwise, they can tell you're doing something else, and you can physically see changes in their body. I was on a call early on in the pandemic with a client in Kansas, and they started the meeting by getting people to just share, hey, what's going on? How are things going? And one of the guys on the call, he was, I would say, you know, in his early 30s, you know, he had a young family at home. He was moving, all this stuff. And you wouldn't have heard it in his voice, but if you watched him on video, he was close to tears. Like his body kind of shook in a way that was obvious physically. And, you know, it was really, it was an important moment, because although he got it together and he was probably, you know, embarrassed, let's just say, the manager could tell that this poor guy was suffering more than we maybe assumed. And so he was then able to address it afterwards, but you wouldn't have picked that up on the phone.
Wow. Great.
That's, he would just, I mean, muted himself, right?
Yeah. And so many people feel like they're inconveniencing somebody if they require the video to be on. But anyway, just that's a great example. Yeah. Yeah. So the last one you talked a little bit about in our webinar today was around technology and kind of, you know, having, you know, to up our games right now on the technology front. Talk us a little bit about that. And I loved your comment today about, you know, creating a safe environment to test technology by first using it inside the organization. Do you want to talk a little bit about technology and the gap and how to close it?
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, for anyone out there who was reticent to use technology, those days are over. We're going to see the technology now has to be, there's more of it, more high tech, more high touch. And I think, you know, redundant systems are critical, and knowing how to use them. I know that sounds funny and it sounds like something we should always be thinking about, but working from home has its unique challenges, right? When you're at work and you've got an IT department and your IT goes down, you call the IT department. When you're at home and your Wi-Fi goes down, you know, IT can't help you. So you have to know, okay, I got to be able to pick up my cell phone and tether. Or I've got to be able to pick up my home phone and call in. But having all that sort of at your ready, almost like you can practice picking up so that you don't skip a beat, especially if you're in an important client call, those kinds of things are really important. Even knowing if you're in a low bandwidth area that you should be off video or on video is critical. So having, I always say to people right now, like, we have to have backups to the backups. Everything has to be charged. Plus you have to have a battery life somewhere else, you know, a remote battery in case the power goes out. It's a little bit like, yeah, we're prepping for a hurricane every single day.
But I love the idea that, you know, you kind of tap people on the shoulder. You got a team, and we've done this at Algonquin where, we ask, anybody want to become the expert on this platform? And
yes,
and it's amazing how, people put up their hand. And if they have a strong interest, then they will do it exceptionally well. Yes. And it doesn't matter what role they had previously. I think the whole idea of job roles is morphing at the same time. Or again, flexibility is the key. So I love that, the redundancy, the backup. But, and I'm going to kind of circle us back to that conversation, because people are going to then ask, oh, well, what technology should I be using? And you have a pretty simple answer to that, and it has to do with clients. So do you want to talk a little bit about, clients are dictating the rules?
Yes. Yeah. Clients. So in selling organizations, I think we have to be listening to what our clients are using and doing. So what are the client's rules for engagement, on-site, off-site? If it's off-site, what are their preferred tools? Because you want them to be the most comfortable. It's your job as the salesperson to get comfortable with what they want to create a good environment for them. Because we've all been in situations where we say, oh, hey, meet me on my, in my Zoom account or my Chime account or whatever, and they can't get in because they've got technical challenges or they've got IT limitations or their mic isn't set up. And so then it's frustrating. But if you just allow them to use their technology platform, then it's easy for them. They don't get frustrated before they even start the call. And they have, everyone has a much better experience. So I think some of my clients were really smart early on in that they did assign all of these different technology platforms to people to learn so that they could then come back and teach the rest of the group, okay, here's how you use these tools. And everyone could be, if there was any unique requirements of them, they could all be sorted out in advance.
I love that. Again, the whole idea that clients are driving it, talked a little bit about how there's a story that we're telling ourselves that, we don't want to bother people because we know, like us, everybody is having to do with a new reality. But you're saying that this is kind of really the time when we should actually be talking with people even more and maybe even in some kind of new ways. How do we communicate in today's COVID reality? How should we be?
How? Well, I think we should be communicating often. People want to hear from us. And I think we should be using video as much as possible. I've been meaning to look this up, frankly. And if you know a source, please let me know. But I have heard from a number of people who should know these things, sales enablement experts and business people that I trust, that they've read studies that show that building a relationship on video is only marginally less effective than face-to-face. If face-to-face is 100%, video isn't 50%, it's like 90%. So I'm looking for some of those data points. But I definitely agree that if we can't be face-to-face, we have to be on video because it's going to allow you to see people, to look them in the eye, to be able to read their body language. It allows you to have a social conversation. It makes you feel connected with them as well. And so I think that everybody needs to get comfortable with this, this platform because it's not going away. I think too, we have to communicate more often. Salespeople have to be really persistent because we don't know if our clients are working, are furloughed, are sick, are off taking care of sick people, are reassigned, are doing three jobs. And so it's incumbent on us to do more persistent follow-up. And I also think that people are busy and that they need to hear from us more often so that they know that we are available for them should they need us.
Yeah. And the idea, again, that some people will tend to think, well, I should be holding off because I don't want to bother them. But again, it's about relevancy. If we're providing information that is relevant to our customers because we know them well, then ultimately it's not noise. It's actually incredibly helpful. And you gave an example, and I thought that was a brilliant, because oftentimes people will say, well, you know, I'm not in the essential service business. I'm thinking I'm not relevant today. But almost everybody has relevant content. And you use the example of sharing health and safety, how you're coming back to work. Do you want to go a little bit more into depth about that and maybe an example?
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. You know, I saw some really interesting things for businesses to stay relevant during these times. So, you know, you could argue that Boeing, you know, is really struggling, right? We first had the 737 MAX issue, and then we have COVID lockdown and no one's traveling. But they're doing something really unique to stay engaged and relevant. They're creating on LinkedIn, actually, public forums that show how all the advancements that they're making to keep airplanes clean and safe. And they're opening up those channels for other people to contribute as well. So they're putting themselves out there, not just as the expert, but also as a community of experts, which I think is a really great way to continue, you know, for them to position themselves as a thought leader. A client of mine in the leasing space did a really excellent job of maintaining their culture during the pandemic. And they recognized that a lot of their clients were struggling. And so they started sending out marketing pieces, marketing, I'm kind of doing air quotes, if you could see me, not around leasing programs, but around, here's what we're doing internally to maintain our culture. Here's what our president is doing. Here's the kinds of things and the tools that we're using to help keep people engaged. And their clients and prospects appreciated it because they were learning about something they were struggling with, even though it wasn't related to the business of finance. So I really love those two examples. And then it goes without saying that the other pieces of communication need to be value-based around your expertise. So giving away, you know, how-to tips, success stories, virtual tours, demos, and the more you can flood the marketplace with that value, with that expertise, the more people will appreciate doing business with you, will flock to you really and want to engage with you.
I love that advice. You know, an example for us, you know, we had to shut down because we were a face-to-face training facility.
Yeah.
And we had quickly become, you know, a virtual instructor led. So we shut down for a week. We trained all of our instructors on the use of Zoom and Teams, showed them how to do those. We turned those into videos, and then we made all those videos available to anybody beyond our organization. So, you know, you can come to our website and find an example of how to set up Zoom and how to use polls. And a lot of this stuff was already out there, but it was kind of embedded in long videos, you know, half an hour for like 30 seconds of knowledge. So modularizing that content and making it available. We also created a little how to run a employee scavenger hunt, a digital scavenger hunt.
And
shared that with our customers. So yeah, you know, it's we got to do more of that. But that's exactly what you're talking about. You're talking about being relevant with the stuff that you're doing. Show people how you're implementing safety. Show people how you're keeping your teams together. Show people how you're using and learning the technology. Everybody is relevant these days because we're all going through the same thing.
Absolutely. And you know, speaking of flexibility, institutions like yours are going to have to think about flexibility, you know, coming into next year. So can you, what the flexibility on having both an online and an in-person training? Can you put 20 people in a room that should hold 100 so everyone stays socially distant and also have 80 people or 800 people online and have the same type of experience?
We're piloting that later this month. Because that's
sure
brand new.
I think that's cool.
We've never done it before. So what I will do is I will videotape our piloting so we can show people.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, all sorts of learning institutions are doing that. But I think that in the corporate world, associations, you know, associations that would normally have 3,000 or 1,000 or 500 people at an event are going to need to find a way to maybe have the event a hybrid. Let's put 50 of the most important people in the room and have everyone else who would normally attend, attend in a virtual way.
Yeah. Brilliant. You know, Colleen, you've talked about, you know, in today's world, we need to be flexible, empathetic, and we need to be technologically savvy. And all of that revolves around us making sure that we are delivering value to our clients. Our clients are at the center of everything we do, and that more communication, especially video communication, and being present and sharing, even when we think we don't have anything to say, we do, because we're all in this together. We're all in the same boat. And I just think those are some great stories and great pieces of advice. Let me, though, ask you, because I always like to try and change it up right at the end, which is, can you give me the name of a person or someone, if you want to keep them anonymous? What piece of advice do you now look back on that you received that really changed kind of your thinking, your thought process, and maybe trajectory of your career?
Oh, there's so many. Well, I'm thinking about, my business mentor, Alan Weiss, sort of more recent memory in the last 10 years, because he has an expression that we laugh about all the time. It's volume over accuracy. But let me explain.
Love it.
What he means is, it's really important to get your message, your expertise out there in a massive way, right? Volume, not meaning like loud and screaming, but volume as in like every day be publishing something. And what he means by accuracy is, you know, stuff that I wrote 3 years ago, maybe even last year, is highly irrelevant now. And that's okay. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay to say, you know what? I've given a second thought to cold calling and don't do it right now.
That's what we call learning.
Yeah. Exactly. But what it did when I got that advice from him a number of years ago is it really made me feel, it freed me up to put my expertise first and to recognize that delivering value to people and to create an environment where they A, see me everywhere, and B, say, man, I get so much from you for free. Just imagine what would happen if we, you know, paid you to come and work for us. That's the kind of ubiquitous environment that I'm trying to create. I had to laugh. I was having just my general annual physical a couple of years ago. My doctor walked in and he's like, Colleen, I see you all over social media and I'm not even on social media. My work here is done.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Volume over accuracy.
Yeah, volume over accuracy. It's a great expression.
Is there a book or a podcast or a video that you've watched recently? You go, wow, that was some really great advice, sage counsel that got me thinking.
What's really funny is from a business perspective, I think, you know, the stuff that I'm really listening to right now that really gets me thinking are podcasts around business. I love business podcasts on entrepreneurialism, like the NPR podcast, How I Built This. Those stories I just love, or Planet Money, because they're such interesting. Those two in particular, or the CBC podcast, The Age of Persuasion.
Terry O'Reilly.
Yeah, Terry O'Reilly. I just love, you know, he always gets me to think a little differently about an interesting topic. And so those kinds of things are really working to, they kind of challenge my thinking and get me, you know, thinking about business, about people, about relationships in a different way.
Awesome. And lastly, you know, is there a piece of advice that you'd give your 20-year-old self? If you could have a chat with your 20-year-old self, what would you tell them?
Yes, I would tell them not to be afraid to ask for help. It's not a sign of weakness, and that people want to be able to help. To circle back to how we started with talking about my dad, I grew up in a household, God love my parents, you know, that I never need anyone's help. I was fully independent. I was smart enough to do this on my own. And it was a message of empowerment. Don't get me wrong. But I think what happened when I hit my 20s and I had a little bit of ego tucked away in there, I maybe took that to the extreme and became too independent. And I probably didn't succeed as fast as I could have in a number of different pursuits because I thought asking for help was a sign of weakness. And so I was reluctant to take a mentor. I was reluctant to, why would I go to that motivational seminar or that training seminar? I should be able to figure this out on my own. And so I think I spun my wheels for a couple of years trying to figure out how to be successful when I didn't need to be.
Oh, good Lord. I hope my kids are listening. They're almost all in their 20s. And, one of the things I see is, again, that reluctance to kind of ask for help. And no wiser words could have been spoken, at least for the Wetherspoon children. So thank you very much.
If you're listening out there.
Yes. Well, I'll maybe force them to do that. But listen, I just wanted to say thank you. We're blessed to have you as part of our community, blessed to have you share your experience. And you've already mentioned this, but you are so giving of your time and of your experience. I'm incredibly grateful. Thank you for joining us for the last little bit. Much appreciated.
Hey, my pleasure. It was really wonderful to be able to be here and chat with you and all of your listeners.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Future of Work series. Let's keep the conversation going. So follow us on social media and learn about our events at futureofworkseries.ca. I'm Doug Wetherspoon. Thanks for joining us.